This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show!
Spoiler alert! What Did You Watch This Week is a candid discussion about recent movies and TV shows, and it may contain spoilers if you haven't watched them yet. Listen at your own risk.
Welcome to episode 208 of What Did You Watch This Week? My name is Mike.
My name is John. You had a little inflection at the end there where it sounded like you were questioning. We just went over this beforehand.
I was questioning the 8. Yeah, I know. I was questioning it. I was unsure already.
We're already off to a bad start.
Yeah, we're off. We're rip-roaring away as we go.
I have to say, so, Mike, this is always so rough with this recording because it's like there's a little bit of a delay there. So,
yeah, we're not sure. Yeah, it's definitely easier when we're in person.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like I watched some really good stuff this week. How about you?
I did a lot of what you normally do. I had my tablet sitting on next to me while I was working and doing work, and a couple of shows I went, oh shit, what happened? And I had to go back and watch it. I feel like that was me this week. I watched a lot of stuff. I actually got back into the X-Files.
Nice.
I kind of made mention. I was thinking about starting over with the X-Files, so I did do that. I'm on I've watched basically an episode a day the last not really a day, I guess, because I didn't watch any today or yesterday, but I've watched five. I watched the first five episodes of season one so far.
Nice.
But that has been a background show that I don't need to pay attention to because right. I may not remember the episode as soon as it kicks on, but within a few minutes, it's like watching How I Met Your Mother. Within a few minutes, I'm like, oh, yeah, I know what's happening here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I'm okay with it. I mean, it's been since I have not rewatched The X-Files from the beginning since the relaunch when season 10 came out. I think that was 4 years ago, I want to say.
Boy, was it that long. Damn.
I think it was.
I'm flies.
This time goes by so damn fast. Yeah, 2000s. It came out in January 2016. So, yeah, so it was 4 years ago. So, I guess technically 4.5 years ago, I watched The X-Files from beginning to end. I own every season on DVD, the original DVD releases with all the bonus features that when they re-released them out on Blu-ray and DVD with the smaller casing, they took all those bonus discs out. So I still have those. My plan actually was to watch the DVDs just for nostalgia purposes. And I will when I'm not watching it on my tablet because every episode's on Hulu right now. And that is sure as easy just to play on Hulu and run with it.
Yeah. Well, I felt like I watched some really good shows this week. The episodes that I watched were really enjoyable. And I watched three new shows that I enjoyed all three of them quite a bit. And, I got some movies in.
Oh, nice.
Well, a couple of comedy specials. So, yeah. Where do you want to start?
What do you want to kick off with? I literally just asked you that too. We can hear each other, but when we talk at the same time, it just doesn't seem to matter.
I know.
Zoe wasn't on this week.
Correct.
It's always an extraordinary playlist. It's on. It was on last night. Today is Monday the 20th, which is Patriots Day, a holiday here in Maine and Massachusetts only. So,
but Mike,
a 3-day weekend.
Mike,
what?
It's also 420, man.
Yes. Okay. So I saw something. There's a wrestler named Dan Barry, who is also he does his own little stand up comedy, and I don't want to ruin it. So if you're gonna have to bear with me while I pull up his Twitter real quick, because he posted, like, he made a meme of himself, or someone else made it and he shared it, but it's in reference to today. And it's worth the time it's going to take me to find it here. So stand by.
Is it going to translate well? Because it's mean. It's a picture, you know.
No. It's written in there. Okay, here we go. He goes, if you celebrate 420, then you probably smoke most of the time anyway. So why celebrate on a specific day? If I had a pine tree in my living room and exchanged gifts with my friends 3 to 5 times a week, I wouldn't really give a shit about Christmas. Right?
Very true. That's very true. Good point.
So yeah, it's very, very true. So yeah. I like how he said a pine tree.
Hi, Cousin Paul. How about the rookie? That was back this week.
Yes, the rookie was back this week. Trying to think of the episode, because I think I watched it last Monday night after we got done recording.
It was the one with the DEA. You know, they were going back after Ripper.
Oh, yeah. It wasn't my favorite episode.
Mine either, especially when Bianca and all.
Especially when what? Cut out.
When Bianca went all nutty, you know, and she, like, went there, and she's like, the cops are on to you, because she felt spurned by Nolan, because she thought that they had something special, because he took her to N.A. You know, he must have feelings for her.
Yeah. You took me to, you took me to, like you said, like, N.A. Yeah. To make sure you stayed clean, so you'd be a good informant.
Mm-hmm.
So.
I like that the Sarge there, though, told him, he's like, you didn't do anything wrong. You know, you did just fine.
Yes. Yep. You did what you were supposed to do. It just wasn't my favorite episode. The MDA guy was a toolbox, but of course he's going to be a love interest with, what's her name?
Nolan's T.O.
Nolan's new CTO, yeah, I can't think of her name. The one that was undercover, and she's not undercover anymore. So
yeah.
I thought it was weird because, like, you know, had the previously on the rookie, we saw the time that she went undercover last minute, and then, you know, like, Nolan had to go in and save her type of thing. Yeah, and so it's like, oh, okay, so we're gonna see him. Nolan's gonna have to go undercover again. Except when he undercover this time, he didn't go undercover as a junkie. He went undercover as, like, a stern businessman who's a badass. It's like he's got someone that.
Yeah, because allegedly the two of them cleaned up their act, and you know, now they're selling stuff instead of being junkies.
Right. It's not on. It was not on last night.
Nope.
So we have a week off of that one, unfortunately.
Yeah, I will say though that we're going to be like what?
I would say I feel the next episode's on this coming Sunday, and it looks to be the season finale.
Well, I guess that would make sense timing-wise. I know that also we've got
Flash 18 and episodes.
Yeah, Flash and Legends come back.
Disregard that. There's 20 episodes, so we have 3 more episodes of The Rookie to watch. So I take that back.
Take it back.
I did. But yeah, like you said, Flash and Legends come back this week, and then this coming. Oh, and technically Supergirl and Batwoman as well, but they come back on Sunday.
Yeah. And that, and I don't really care about them much.
Neither do I. Stumptown and This Is Us is all over, obviously. And New Amsterdam, they had their season finale this week. Did you see what I mean by when I said it was a very interesting opening?
Yeah, yeah. Spell that out, because I really like the way that they did it.
Okay, so I came up with the guy that plays Max, the actor that plays Max. He was recording from his living room or something, like everyone has been lately. And it was an interesting opening. Again, he said this is the season finale, but this is they're not airing the original episode. They had one more episode that they were going to air before the finale and introduced a new character played by Daniel Day-Kim. But the episode was called Pandemic, and it just hits a little too close to home with everything going on right now. So they decided to not air that episode. However, they need to introduce this new character, this new head trauma surgeon. And so what they did is they took bits and pieces, which ends up being like 8 minutes, essentially, or 6 minutes, of clips of Daniel Day-Kim to introduce him to us, him arriving at the hospital and then showing his quirkiness and mannerisms and how he acts as a doctor and everything. And then they cut to Daniel Day-Kim, who talked about it as well. And he actually said he contracted COVID-19 while he was filming this episode in New York City. Mm-hmm. But he's home now and he's recovered and he's doing fine. So we got the season finale of New Amsterdam, which I thought it was a good episode.
Yeah. Yeah. I really appreciate that they clipped together those things to introduce him, because it really, like, it would have been a bit jarring seeing him in this episode alone, because he's basically he's seems very laid back. He doesn't stress out about anything, but it's almost like criminally laid back. Like, he'll go and take naps in the middle of his shift. And he explains that, you know, when somebody comes in that needs him, he is a trauma surgeon. When somebody comes in that needs a trauma surgeon, he needs to be at his peak. So he needs to have a snack or have a nap or something like that. He basically, you know, self-care saves lives.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I thought it was good. What was interesting to me is when the episode came on, when I fired up Hulu, I saw it was 53 minutes long. And I thought, oh, that's extended. So I wonder if they just cut those commercials out of the episode and just had it take up an hour of time instead of, you know, the normal 44 minutes. Because his introductions, the two introductions and then showing those clips, I mean, ate up over 8 minutes of TV time. So.
Right, right. But I liked what he said.
I thought it was good.
He specifically I always show up when I'm paged, but I only stay when I'm needed.
Yeah. Yeah. And in this episode, the main thing is that some pre-measured morphine that they had gotten, I'm going to say in the mail, but some pre-measured morphine, like these vials that are supposed to have like 2 milliliters or 2 cc's of morphine in them. So they didn't have to worry about measuring it out. They could just stick it in and push the plunger down until it was empty or overfilled. And it was causing all these patients to be overdosed at the same time. Well, you know, similar towards each other. And it took a while to figure out what it was. And at first they thought there was no morphine in the vials. And then the former drug addict doctor, or ER doctor, she opened one of the vials up and smelled it. And she's like, no, this is morphine. And then when she set it down on the tray, of course, it all spilled out. And then that's when someone else, it might have even been her again, saw it and said, that's way more than 2 cc's of morphine. Look at that. Frome had a story. What was his story?
His story was that he was kind of sitting it was basically this red man and woman who were counseling because they were getting divorced. And he had to give a psych evaluation because they were taking the guy's guns and Yeah, he didn't want
it's
that.
It's called the red flag law. And in New York, they have it's called the red flag law in New York, Florida, a bunch of other states. In Maine, that did not pass. However, we do have a new restricted persons law that goes into effect July 1st, which is similar in nature, but not exactly the same. But basically, like you're saying, he had to have an eval from Frome to see if he was a threat to himself or threat to his wife, to see if he merited having this red flag put against him, which is actually also called an extreme protection order to prevent him from having guns. It kind of hit close to home because that's the project I've been working on with the state since September for what I do with my job and integrating this new law into my system. And in fact, I have a bunch of testing of the new system tomorrow. So I'm actually glad I'm in the office and I'm not sitting at home tomorrow.
Thanks. I felt that after everything that Frome went over with the guy, I felt that he was a threat. I mean, the guy talked about how one night, he drew down with his gun and saw that it was his wife and didn't put the gun away. Like,
this guy had admitted that he held it on her a little bit longer. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was purposely terrorizing her with that weapon. And Frome even kind of said that, but yet the judge is like, well, so I thought that was odd because, like you just said, to me, they proved that, yeah, he was a dangerous threat and shouldn't have his firearms. And yet that wasn't the result.
Yep.
So I don't know.
And then we also had the story where Vijay Kapoor was getting sexually harassed by that woman. And of course, in a very Dr. House twist, it turned out that she had a tumor that was pressing against part of her brain that controlled her inhibitions. I'm pretty sure Leighton Meester literally had that happen on an episode of House, except for she was like a young girl.
Yeah, I believe you're correct. And, I believe you're 100% correct.
But then at the end, Vijay got a text from that woman who's on the board who's always riding Max's ass, and she was like, call me sometime. Which is interesting.
Well, yes, because they were in the elevator together, and he kind of vented to her because every time he said to someone that, you know, this woman was approaching him this way, they all kind of laughed or like, what are you talking about? No, you must have been mistaken. And then he's like, what do you mean? You don't think someone could hit on me? And then, yeah, in the elevator, he said something kind of forward to her, but it wasn't really. It was in relation to what he'd been going through. But when she doesn't know what he's been going through, it's kind of awkward.
Right.
And then she takes her phone out and just starts, and he's, oh, shit, oh, shit. And then it's, like you said, the text, you know, call me sometime.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so that show's over for the season. The actor that played Max there, he did say they would air that episode, Pandemic, at Ryan Eggold at another time. So I don't know if it'll be next season or just kind of like they'll throw it up at some point. But
we'll get it eventually. I'm not worried about it. I think we got the important part anyway, which was Daniel Day-Kim's introduction.
Say that again, please.
I said, I think we got the important part with Daniel Day-Kim's introduction.
Yes, we did. We did. So it's not like I'm going to go back and seek this episode out. I'm not that big of a fan of the show.
No.
So, I mean, I enjoy it, but I don't. Yeah.
I'm assuming
Schooled
this week.
Say again. Schooled.
Yep, that's what I said.
I like Meller is jealous of Leslie, and I love the misinterpretation that Leslie thinks is a woman, and then he finds out that Leslie's a man, and now he's all insecure. And instead of wanting to be comfortable at home with Nurse Julie and not doing anything, because that's the dream, is to be in a rut, because that means things are going good. Then he finds out Leslie's a man and immediately is like, oh, no, no, no. And of course, Leslie's better at him than everything, except sports, we find out.
Which was surprising. I thought for sure he'd be like really good at sports. Just to, you know,
right,
have
but
one
I liked
thing.
How they handled. I like how they handled it, though. I like how Mellor just dominated and destroyed him on the court, and all the teachers and students slowly filed in to watch this. And then that one kid starts choking, and Leslie runs over and saves him, and that's all that matters. It completely erases everything that just happened during the game they were playing.
Right. Yeah, because then they're all chanting his name instead.
Yep. So I thought it was good. And what was the play they went and saw at the end?
I don't remember.
It doesn't matter, but they went and saw some play at the end together. So that way they went out and they did something together.
Now, what do you think about that, Mike? Because you're in a long-term relationship. Is the rut the dream?
Yep. Fuck no. No. When you're in a rut and you don't get out of the rut, that's the end of the relationship. The rut is not the dream. The rut is the end.
Okay.
I mean, you can get into a rut and everything, and that happens. You know, work gets in the way, life gets in the way, things get in the way. You know, but as soon as you can climb out of the rut, that's what you need to do. You need to climb out of the rut as soon as you possibly can. Once you realize that you're there.
What if you don't
realize?
Because
the rut and staying in the rut too long is what ends it.
I agree. I just wanted to, I figured it was pertinent since it came up just now in this show that, you know, we re-examine this kind of thing. But yeah, it's the truth. Ruts are death.
Yeah. I mean, like my wife and I, you know, I'm home. I work in the office every third day. Otherwise, I'm home every day and every weekend. My wife works from home every single day. She's been working from home for 5 weeks now. Like the most she has done in the last 5 weeks is she delivers bread to her friend Megan's house or to her mother's house. As far as getting in the car and going somewhere, she walks around the neighborhood. And then today, you know, we drove up to Bangor to get Chick-fil-A and drove back, you know, went through the drive-thru and everything, like I told you earlier. But like, we're still trying to find time to found time to do something today just to mix it up because, you know, I'll be in the office tomorrow, then I'll be home Wednesday, Thursday, then I'll be in the office on Friday, and then I'll be home for 4 days. So,
yeah.
That sounded rough.
Yeah, I know all about that.
Wesley. So, I put it in the dishwasher and loaded it all up. Get a new cup. Sorry. What was the B story in school this week? This Lainey had to be doing something ridiculous.
It was principal for a day because, you know, the Glasscott was going to go have surgery on his bunion. You know, he's like, I'm going under the knife. I might die. And they're like, you're having bunion surgery. So CB was principal for a day. And, you know, the three popular girls had a fight. And he was like, I don't know how to solve this. And Lainey's like, no, literally, this is how you solve it. Oh no, I know better. It was dumb.
Yeah, that's right. Principal Glass. Why did you just fake up? Say there was a fake party in Germantown and then they would have the party anyways. That's exactly what I said. Oh, that's what you said? CB, you're fired. Lainey.
But it was a really good lesson at the end. I really actually appreciated what they said, which was, you know, a good leader doesn't do it all themselves. They use the tools that they have at their disposal. They use other people's strengths, which is very good point.
Exactly. That is a good point. I watched the Connors. Connors was excellent this week. It's just a fun. I enjoy the show. It's funny. Dan and Katie Seagal there. They finally, he's told her he loved her. And then they're now in a relationship. So Dan's got a new girlfriend. But no,
is her name
it's just
Peggy?
A funny show. If you like Roseanne. No, her name is. Shit, I don't know. I think it's Sophia or Sophie or something. It's Sophie, I think. Sophia.
Well, that's not fun. It should be
not Sophia.
Should be Peggy.
It'd be fun if it was Peggy, I know. No, that's not what it is. I feel like it's Sophie.
Oh, well.
So let's see what else. We have not a lot to talk about. We got Modern Love to discuss, and Westworld and Hunters, and What We Do in the Shadows came back. You and said Blackwood. You watched. Nope, I forgot to watch Blacklist.
All right, well, we'll hold off on that one.
Yeah, I forgot to watch Blacklist. Was it good?
No. Oh, no, it really wasn't.
No, I'm sitting there last night.
Go ahead, you were sitting there last night?
Well, no, I was just saying, I was sitting there last night kind of like doing a mental check-off of all my shows, and did I get them all? Did I go through them all and everything? And I think I did, and I think I even mentioned it to you at one point.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you told me. Yeah. Forgot about. I think I got everything.
So, oh, well. So you said you watched three new shows. Well, what were they?
One of them was, one of them? On Amazon. One of them was on Amazon. It was called Tales from the Loop.
Yeah, my cousin Johnny said he's enjoying it, and then you recommended it, and then last night I looked at how long the first episode was, and I went, I just can't stay up another hour. If it was a half-hour show, I would have watched it, but it was an hour, so I went to bed. Truth be told.
Are you planning on watching it?
I do plan on checking it out, but actually I want to ask you first, did you enjoy it?
I did, and it's an anthology show, apparently. But it also, this first episode really set it up to be, like, I think this set the stage for what's to come, and that excites me.
Okay. Well, I do plan on checking it out. Speaking of anthology shows, Modern Love is also an Amazon show, and the wife and I watched episode 2. Cupid is a prying journalist. I like the fact it's a half an hour. We really enjoyed it. It was kind of funny, the mirroring stories. Essentially, you have a journalist who's interviewing a young dating app, you know, startup founder guy. And she asks him, like, after they're done, and we pick up when they're done the interview, essentially. And then she says, can I just ask you, have you ever been in love? And then he kind of makes, like, type face, and she's like, we can talk about it off the record. And she hits pause or stops the recording. And then this 30-minute episode, the first half is him telling his story about, you know, his girl that he had and what happened and how they kind of broke up. And they show flashbacks of his relationship. And then she recounts her story of her first love and how they kind of broke up. And then her current relationship and how she kind of re-met up with him and everything. And you know, it was a good story. I don't know why it's TVMA. There's no nudity. I think there was one F-bomb. I don't understand why it's TVMA, to be honest. Between the first two episodes, there was nothing I saw in it that I think it needs to be rated that high. Unless there's something in the coming episodes, but you know what I mean?
Yes.
What did you think of this episode?
I really enjoyed it. I find with this show that I really like the stories. I like the characters, but they also really kind of, they give me some achy heart feelings. You know, some of the stuff, like, you know.
Yes.
In this case that, you know, he had a girl that he met who he kind of fell head over heels for right out of the gate. They had a really magical thing, and then she cheated on it. And the way that she announced it, you know, the way that she told him, she was like, you know, I messed up. And he's like, what do you mean? She's like, well, I went back home, and you remember that guy that I told you about that I dated in high school? Yeah. Well, I ran into him, and well, you said he's married, right? Well, he was, but he got divorced and we were at the bar. And so I let him go back in time. Well, what do you mean? You kissed him? Well, no, I slept with him. And he's like, well, fuck yeah, I'm gone. You know, I'm leaving. And, you know, the fact that she was broken up about it, okay, that's great. But you know what? You still did it. You made a conscious choice to sleep with this guy. And you could feel bad about it all you want, but you still did it. So it just, it hurts my heart.
I really appreciated that there was not a big fight. That he literally just said, oh, okay, packed his shit up and left.
Yeah. Yeah, like, they didn't go on for hours.
He just thought back. Yeah. They didn't even show us a montage. He just packed his stuff up and left. And then the next time they saw each other was like a couple years later, walking down the street, and they passed each other while they were with their respective new relationships. Mm-hmm. My wife said, well, I mean, at least she told him and didn't string him along or da 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 da. I'm like, yeah, but she did it. So I can't give her any credit. I mean, I guess I can give her credit. She was honest immediately, but that's the end of it.
Right. So. Exactly. You know, it'd be like if you shot somebody and then you were like, but I felt really bad about it. Okay. Well, congratulations. You still shot somebody.
Yeah. Exactly. So anyhow, what was one of your new shows that you watched?
There's along the same lines, there's a new show called Run on HBO. And I had seen previews for it, and so I decided to check it out. And basically, it's this girl. You've seen her in a few things. You'd recognize her, probably. But middle-aged woman, or maybe young middle-aged, she's sitting in her car out in a mall parking lot in the opening of the episode, and she's talking to her husband. And he's like, yeah, I need you to be home. The speaker people are coming to set stuff up. And she's like, all right, I'll be there.
Yes, I did see that. It's a commercial for that. Yeah.
Basically, she gets a text and it just says run, all capital letters, run. And she looks at it and she kind of panics a little bit, and then she puts her phone away, and then she gets it one more time and she looks at it and she replies with the word run. And essentially, this was a code that her and an ex-boyfriend set up years ago, that if I say run and you say run, we run away together. We drop everything in our lives and we run away together. And that's what they do. It's only a half an hour. It's actually interesting. But again, it kind of hurts my heart a bit because, you know, she has a husband and he's sending her text and he's leaving her voicemail. Like, where are you? I'm going to call the police. What's going on? I'm so worried about you. Because she doesn't even go home to pack. She just literally gets on a plane or a train and goes.
Oh, that's. I didn't realize it wasn't her husband. So that's interesting.
Yeah. This is check that out. I think you'll like it. Because at the end of it, they had like a, you know, coming up this season on Run. And it looks like there's a lot more going on than just that. So, yeah, I'm interested. I'm interested.
Okay. I watched a new show.
Okay.
It's on. It's actually on Shudder. So I figured I'd check it out while I'm doing my free month trial. And it's a TV series called Cursed. And I think this is a 5-part documentary series. And it's about cursed movies, if you will.
Oh, yep.
Yeah. Like The Crow. And so like the first episode. Like, yeah, exactly. Like The Crow. So the first episode is about. That's interesting. The first episode is about. The Exorcist, and they're only about 35 minutes long, though, but it goes into some of the detail of why people think this movie's cursed, or why the rumors of this movie being cursed are. And they talk to Linda Blair, and they talk to some other people involved in the movie and everything. And I actually don't want to give it away. It's kind of really fascinating. It's worth going to get the free month to watch these 5 episodes. I watched the first 2. One of the big things that came out of it, I don't know if it was the first episode or the second episode, was they said, they talked about, someone talked about bad things happening in this comedy movie. But no one calls that one cursed because it's a comedy. People really only talk about cursed movies and dark movies that are horror, dark subject matter movies, you know, because they talk about, first episode is Exorcist, second episode is The Omen, and then Poltergeist, and Twilight Zone, the movie, and The Crow. Those are the five movies they look at, the five episodes. And they didn't do The Matrix. No, they didn't do that one. But Matrix isn't a horror movie, but it is dark subject matter, I realize. The Omen, I fucking believe that movie is cursed and the people around it based just off watching the episode. I had never really heard about it before. I had heard about The Exorcist being cursed, Poltergeist being cursed, all the bad things that happened to the people around the movie after that, before it and everything. Same thing with The Crow and Twilight Zone, the movie, because they did have the one of the main actors and two children were killed in a stunt accident on the movie, Twilight Zone, the movie. However, in The Omen, I hadn't heard anything there. That movie's cursed. All the bad shit that happened and went along, and like this plane crashing, the small plane crashing, and it's the pilot actually crashed and it hit a car, and it killed the people in the car, and it was his wife and kids that were in the car. So like he crashed his plane into his family's vehicle, like just happenstance, like that was a coincidence somehow. And it really was. It wasn't like some weird, like he was looking for her to drive around so he could crack, you know, some, you know, family annihilator thing. No, it was a freak accident, and it just happened to be his family's car he crashed into.
Damn. So,
yeah, and that's there's way worse shit than that. That makes me think The Omen's cursed that they talked about.
Damn,
you know. Yeah. So anyways, that movie's worth checking out. You know, it probably will be a topic next season, Batwoman, the series, apparently, because that set appears to be cursed with two, people on set being critically injured.
But it's not horror.
So it's dark subject matter. It's the Dark Knight cousin. Anyways, that's my stretch.
Yeah. I don't know. But they definitely have to put The Matrix on there before that, though, because they lost people. A lot of shit happened.
Yeah. I think they went with older movies first. I mean, I think the newest movie that they did was The Crow, and that was 1990 or 93 or something like that, I believe.
Yeah.
So. What was the... in 1994 was the film. What was the third flick that you, third new TV show you checked out?
So I checked out the first episode of that new Netflix series called #BlackAF.
How was it?
It's a reality type show. It's in the vein of The Office or Parks and Rec. But basically the guy who does Blackish and a bunch of other stuff, it's supposed to be like, this is his life. Rashida Jones is supposed to be his wife. And his daughter is filming this whole thing for her admission to film school. And I got to say, this was funny as shit. Like, I laughed a lot in this. Yeah. Seriously, check this out. I laughed my ass off. There was some really funny shit in here. Some of it was dumb, but a lot of it I really, really liked. It's over the top, and it's very much calling their blackness into question. Other people in the black community are questioning, you know, how black they are, what kind of black they are. It's a riot. I do recommend it.
Cool. I'll check it out. I had seen the trailer. The trailer looked funny, so I mean, I definitely did plan on looking at it at some point.
Yep. I've only done the first episode so far.
So what we do in the shadows. Nice. All right. I'll watch that. I'll watch the first two this week. If it's a half hour, I'll watch the first two so I can catch up. So, What We Do in the Shadows came back with two episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just as funny as it was.
I rewatched the entire first season just to be fresh and caught up. So.
That's only 10 episodes. I mean, basically, you know, so it's definitely doable. I like their theme song.
Yes.
Incidentally. The energy vampire is all his pictures from past to present looks exactly the same.
Exactly. He is Colin Robinson. They always say Colin Robinson.
So the season opens with Laszlo and Nadia. They're excited about their new familiar Topher, but of course they go through like a half dozen familiars they had that were killed before Topher came along. And Topher, he's the Haley Joel Osment, I think his name is.
Yes.
Yeah. So he appears to be a very dedicated servant when everyone's around, but when they're not, he's just kind of a useless turd. He has no interest in the vampire.
Yeah.
And that werewolves were cool. I like when they go outside and Topher's like, "What's that humming noise?" And he's like, "Oh, it's the pond heater, but don't touch it because the wiring's bad. I've been telling them they need to fix it for years and they haven't." He's like, "No, I'll just get it," and he gets killed. And so they take him to a necromancer. And apparently he's a shyster, and he charges him $350 to revive Topher, but he comes back as a zombie who keeps attacking Guillermo, but no one believes him that he's attacking Guillermo. For whatever reason, the vampires are in denial about Topher being a zombie because zombies aren't real. And I think it's hilarious when Guillermo's like, "So wait a second, like witches are real, vampires are real, werewolves are real. But zombies, they can't be real." And they just laugh. "Of course not. Ha ha ha." I thought it was fantastic. And then when Topher's trying to kill Guillermo
Nandor?
What's the other vampire's name? When he comes in and saves Guillermo, and he breaks Topher's neck, and then Topher gets back up because he's starting, and he drowns him, and then he throws him into a fence, and then he stands on him and tells him to plug the. I mean, it was just the whole thing was hilarious because he kept doing the, "Oh, the sad partings of Topher." What? He's still alive? So I just thought it was great. And they bring him back to Wallace, and Wallace agrees to take him back, but no refund, so they can have miniature license plate keychains. And then.
Yes.
The post-credit scene, we see Topher being brought downstairs with the other zombies, apparently, and his job is to make license plate keychains. I thought that was good.
There was a lot in this episode that I really liked. They kind of recap, like you said, where they've gone through a bunch of familiars. Nandor has been on a journey of self-discovery because he was turning himself into mist form and got sucked into an air purifier. And it really opened his eyes to the world. Colin Robinson has been feasting down at the DMV so often that they finally just gave him a license. And the first thing that he did was he drove his car and blocked the Lincoln Tunnel so that everybody was pissed at him. And he just sat there feasting.
Also, the big backstory is that the Vampire Council has been sending assassins to try to kill kill everyone in the house because they were sentenced to die, and Guillermo's been killing them all and hiding the bodies and everything, or they've been vaporizing or whatever it is, which I also think is funny, but he can't tell them because then he'll be a vampire killer and they'll kill him and not make him a vampire. So he's been eating like chocolate covered cappuccinos, coffee beans or whatever. And then when he drops them on the floor and Nandor thinks it's his poop.
Yeah.
I thought that was hilarious. It wasn't that zombies aren't real. It was that ghosts aren't real, which we find out about in the second episode. That's right. That's what it is. Yeah. Ghosts aren't real.
The Wallace the Necromancer was played brilliantly by Benedict Wong, and I loved when he was like doing his little ritual and he kept like looking at his phone and answering texts and, you know, making weird noises that made absolutely no sense. The other thing that I thought was funny was Topher's stupid, upbeat, optimistic dude bro energy. Colin Robinson couldn't drain him. No matter what, he could never drain him, and it was driving him a little nuts.
Yes, yes, that's right. That's true. What did you think of episode 2?
Loved it. I loved it. I don't even remember what this is from, but I wrote down the line. All right, then, Dr. Arsehole. How do you explain this? And I don't remember exactly what was going on, but
yeah, I don't remember either. But apparently, the ghosts are in the home. Nadja performs a séance, and it's former lover Jeff, aka Gregor. But it's not Gregor anymore; it's just Jeff.
It's pronounced Jesk because she can never get it right.
Jeff,
right? So it's always Jeff.
And I love how, like, I don't know if it was Laszlo or Nando was like, wait a second, we're dead, so where are our ghosts? And they do a seance on themselves and their own ghosts appear for their unfinished business. And Nando's was the least funny. He's just, his ghosts wanted to be reunited with their horse, and so he does that and they go off to on their own. And but Laszlo's was the, go ahead.
I was going to say, the funniest thing about Nandor's ghost was the fact that Nandor's ghost was only speaking in his native tongue, and Nandor has forgotten his native tongue, so he couldn't communicate with him.
Yes, that's right. Laszlo's unfinished business was that right before Nadja killed him and turned him to a vampire, he was about to orgasm, and he couldn't, and so he's tried masturbating, but he has ghost hands and it doesn't work. So he thinks that Laszlo's hands will work. So this is what you need to do for me so I can go be at peace. And Laszlo doesn't really say anything. He kind of makes a face. And then there's near the end of the episode, Nadja goes into like Laszlo, their room or whatever. And there's just ectoplasm. Basically, the ghost painted the walls and the ceilings. She's like, what is all this? Oh, it's ectoplasm. My doppelganger. He had an incident, but he's gone on he's solved his unfinished business. Oh, this needs to be cleaned up. Have Guillermo clean this up. Oh yeah, I will straight away. I thought that was absolutely friggin' hilarious.
It was awesome. I loved it.
Nadja's doppelganger ends up inhabiting a doll, so she can hang out a while. So now we have a talking doll. That's not creepy. But I think one of my favorites. But... What?
I said it's a super creepy doll, and I love it.
Oh, yeah. But I think Colin Robinson trying to do his up dog joke all episode and no one falling for it, which I think, or feeding into it, which was my favorite part of it all. So he conjures his dead grandmother to tell her the up dog joke, and she laughs, and then he laughs, and then he sends her away.
Yep.
It's a fun show, plain and simple.
Yes, I love it so much. I was happy that they came back with two episodes because basically I watched one and then I noticed that it said two and I was like, oh, it's a bonus. So, yeah.
Heck yeah. All right, let's see here. Hunters. We had episode 8, the Jewish question. This was a very powerful episode. We find out that Lonnie's still alive, which is good, but Murray is definitely dead. And the beginning is interesting because Myers and the FBI agent, she actually lets him go, but then goes with her. She goes with him. And when they head back to like their headquarters, I'm just going to say headquarters, everyone at first is mad that she's there, but he's just like, no, we need her. Shut up. And this and that. And then everyone's there except for Murray and Jonah. And then Jonah shows up and, you know, he's like, I'm sorry. And that's the end of it. And what I think is funny about this, maybe not funny, but what I think is interesting is about this, is that like the next scene after that is them at the funeral. And it's not, Myers was never brought back to jail. Like, she never explained why she let him go or anything. Didn't you find that odd?
I did find that a little bit odd, because she had specifically said when she had him in custody, she said, this is a one-night stand, which was an odd way to say it. But she said, this is a one-night stand. After we get through this, I'm taking you down again. I'm going back to hunting you. And
yeah,
so I thought that that was kind of odd, yes.
And instead, she went to the funeral, and then now it's like they're all working together. So the senator, the U.S. senator, who when we last saw, he went into his home and his girlfriend or someone was dead. I don't know. I can't figure out the relation that they two have. Maybe it was his sister-in-law or something. He seemed to like her, though. She was dead, and then they tried to kill him, and he ended up killing that guy. And so in this episode, when he's trying to clean up the bodies, the police show up, and he goes on the run. And so now, of course, he's a suspect for murder. Biff, his name's Biff or whatever. So that was a pretty big one. We get the fucking devastating backstory as to why Meyer never married Ruth, and what happened at Auschwitz where the wolf was like, here, shoot that innocent man or I'm going to shoot her. And she's begging and pleading for him to just let her die. And instead Myers kills the guy. And then we find out that he had to shoot 11 prisoners before the wolf wouldn't shoot Ruth. And that's why they never got together, because he didn't feel worthy of her, because he didn't respect what she wanted. So, yeah, I thought that was bad.
Yeah. Absolutely. It was, and like then, you said, a lot of powerful imagery. There was a lot of stuff that was going on. One thing that really kind of got me was the fact that Lonnie was still alive. It was like, it just kind of got brushed aside. Like, I legitimately thought he was dead at the end of the last episode. And then he's just like there nursing a wound, and everybody's acting like no big deal. I was traumatized. I thought he was dead.
I thought he was dead as well. So, you want to hear something interesting?
I do.
So in this episode, they go after Wernher von Braun, right?
Yes.
And basically, yeah, he was a Nazi and a NASA scientist and everything. And they're trying to find him. They feel like I think it was the FBI detective who said, do you really think? Because they said, oh, but von Braun died last month from pancreatic cancer. And her response was like, do you really think the guy that's been leading the Nazis, one of their top scientists, is going to suddenly die a month before they launch their new whatever it is they're launching? And so they go to another Nazi hunter, so Wernher von Braun was a real Nazi. A real scientist. He was really brought over to the United States. He really worked for NASA, and he really died on June 16th, 1977, from pancreatic cancer. So I thought it was interesting that they took that history of who he was as a real person and then fictionalized it, saying that he really didn't die then. You know, he was still alive later on. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Because the blackout happened July 13th. And the blackout in New York, the New York City blackout of 1977 happened July 13th and 14th. That was a real thing that they focused on in episode 7 and bled over to episode 8. So we find Von Braun's alive, and it was Joe and Meyer and Jonah that go out and speak to him. And Jonah tortures the shit out of this guy to get information from him as far as to what they're doing. And the Nazi hunter that gave them the information as to where they thought Von Braun might be, even though they believed he was dead, who was played by, what's that actor's name? Judd Hirsch?
Yes.
That was real.
When they were like, you know,
yeah, that was
they said something about, like, you know, the top Jew, or, you know, he's one of our most prolific people. And I'm like, oh, this is going to be somebody big. And sure enough, Judd Hirsch.
Judd Hirsch, yeah. But that was a real person who died in 2005. He was 96. So I like how they're tying real history in with this and then kind of fictionalizing a little bit, or I enjoy how they're tying in real history with this. Kind of like how what was the time show that we really liked where they jumped through time and we had the
Timeless.
The lifeboat. Kind of like how that used real history to tell their stories. They're using real history with a fictional twist to tell their stories in here. So I think that's kind of interesting.
Yes, I agree.
But they torture the shit out of Von Braun, and then eventually Joe kind of kills him because to kind of put him out of his misery, because Jonah just electrocuted him practically to death. And they find out that. Go ahead.
Nope, I was just saying, yep.
Oh. They find out that the big Nazi plan is to poison everybody with this drug that sits dormant in your system once it builds up, and then 6 weeks later it kicks in and it'll kill you. Like, that's the testing we saw, like, in the third world countries that they were doing. Like, they go into the room and all the kids are dead. And they're doing this by lacing corn syrup, which high fructose corn syrup, which is going to be a new sweetener added to foods. And they think it's only going to affect poor people because only poor people are going to buy food that has high fructose corn syrup in it. And I'm like, no, that's fucking everything they make. But that's today, not 1977. So what'd you think of that aspect of
You said aspect, which, you know, sounds like aspic, which is, you know, a different type of sweetener. No, I thought that was a very cool twist, because like you said, they spend a lot of time drawing from actual things that happen. So there is a lot of truth, or at least reimagined truth. So they're not making people up. Werner von Braun was a real person. You know, the Judd Hirsch character was a real person. These are real people in a lot of these cases. But at the same time, like I said, you know, in that first episode, the chess game did not really happen. And so they do take some creative, but I do like how they.
And I'm sure Meyer didn't have to kill 11 people to prevent, you know. So.
Right. Yeah. Oh, two more episodes left.
Are we going to watch both episodes this week to finish it up?
Might as well.
Okay. We'll watch both episodes this week to finish it up.
Excellent.
Oh, let's see. I think other than Westworld, does that cover all our shows?
No, it does not, sir.
Which one am I missing?
Killing Eve.
Oh, you know what? I did watch Killing Eve. I just didn't write it down. I'm so happy that show was back.
A lot happened. Give us a rundown.
Okay, no. A whole shitload happened here to kick off the third season. And it's so sad it's only 8 episodes, by the way. Hold on real quick. Speaking of 8 episodes, I noticed that Westworld is only 8 episodes this season instead of its normal 10, like the last 2 seasons were.
Yeah, that kind of bugs me.
Yeah, because I watched the most recent episode aired last night, but we're not going to talk about that one, but we're going to talk about the one from the week before. But when I finished watching the one from the week before, it said only 3 episodes left to the exciting conclusion. I'm like, what? So anyhow, So this takes place 6 months after the events that happened at the end of season 2. Villanelle is in Spain, and she's about to get married to another woman. And they're actually not about to get married. They're at their wedding. And Villanelle's speech is about previously loving someone, and she's so happy that she killed her. That way she's not around anymore. And everyone laughs, but it's not a joke, except Villanelle does know Eve's alive. We meet this new assassin named Dasha. And apparently Dasha is the one who trained Villanelle. And we get to see Dasha as a child, or as a teenager, whatever it was, where she was a gymnast. And I thought it was that famous Russian gymnast that first, because that's how the episode actually starts, is we meet Dasha as a gymnast child in the 1970s, then we cut to Villanelle's marriage. Anyhow, so Dasha is a gymnast, and she has got a kind of a boyfriend, but I guess the boyfriend's too big of a distraction, so she murders her boyfriend. And then thing where she pours chalk on his face. What was your thoughts? Go ahead.
No. That was how I took it as well, was that, you know, he was a distraction. He was keeping her from what, you know, she really wanted to do. So she just flat out murdered him.
Yeah, exactly. So Dasha's going to be villain. When Villanelle sees Dasha, she stops dancing with her wife and immediately attacks Dasha, and they get into a big fucking fight that is horrific in nature. And I guess the assumption is, based on the rest of the episode, that Villanelle must have left her wife and is not married anymore or something, because we don't see the wife at all the rest of the episode, do we not?
Correct. I didn't see her at all. And that was the impression I got. Like, basically, when they had that fight at the wedding or at the reception or what have you, it felt to me like they just walked out after that. Like, she was like, okay, I can't have a normal life. I'll go with you.
Yeah. So they want Villanelle to return to the 12. And if Dasha gets Villanelle to return to the 12, Dasha gets to go back to Russia. Finally gets to go home. She hasn't been able to go home in, you know, decades. And Villanelle will be promoted to the role of keeper, which is what Dasha's role is. So Villanelle will then be training people. It would make her more powerful than both Dasha and Constantine, so her old handler. So to prove her loyalty, Villanelle has to kill a local political agitator, which she does. And then pours, I guess, some sort of powder stuff on her face. It's the similar method of how Dasha killed people, I guess. In the interim, Eve is left MI6 and she's working at a Korean restaurant in England, which at first I thought she was in Korea or China or someplace else, because what we saw, you know, of her initially, and then she's in England still. She's working at a restaurant and she's just trying to be herself. Kenny also quit MI6 and he works as an investigative journalist. And she drunk dials him, I guess, and leaves him a message. And that's why he kind of reaches back out to her. And this really pissed me off, I'm not going to lie, because I really like Kenny. But she goes to meet up with him at his office, finds no one around. And then prior to that, though, we did see Kenny with his earphones on and someone was kind of lurking in the office that he doesn't see or hear. And then we see a body fall like behind Eve, like outside. And it's like, oh shit, that's Kenny. And then she runs downstairs and sure as shit, you know, Kenny, they fucking killed Kenny. Well, someone threw him off the roof.
you're skipping an important part in there, which is basically that Kenny quit working with his mother at MI6, and he's now working for a newspaper doing, well, it's not a newspaper, it's an online newspaper type thing. And he basically is still looking into some of the big part of the 12. He's still looking into them, and he tells Eve that, and she's like, no, I'm sticking out of this. I'm not going to. And then she's, you know, she thinks better of it and says, okay, I'm in. I'll help you. And then he gets killed.
Fair enough. Okay. But still, it sucks.
Oh, it, I like absolutely
a lot.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. And, by the end of the episode, someone has told Villanelle that Eve is still alive. What else did I miss? Because I'm sure I missed some other things in there.
I don't really think so. I'm double checking my notes here. Eve's former boss over at MI6, Carolyn, she's now been demoted. She's under investigation for everything that happened. Constantine, we get to see him briefly, but it's almost like he's trying to stay out of things, but he's not. He's getting messages, including he gets a food delivery out of the blue. Like, he didn't order it. And so he takes the food out and opens up the menu, and there's a coded message in there.
Yep. That's right. Yep. So I wonder what that's about. We'll find out probably.
I'm sure.
So.
Yep.
So I'm very interested to see what happens. I mean, the season is, I'm already sad we only have 7 more episodes.
Me too.
Because I feel like there's a lot of story to be told this season. So. All right. Westworld. Go ahead with it. It was a big episode. They're all big episodes.
This was a huge episode. This episode was genre. And like, we didn't get the usual thing with Westworld is that we get like multiple stories from multiple different points of view. We didn't really get that. I mean, we got a little bit of it, but we didn't get the majority of this takes place with Caleb and Dolores, and they've got Liam Dempsey. We start off getting Serac's backstory, and it's interspersed through the entire episode where we basically find out that Serac and his brother created Insight, the giant quantum computer. I got to tell you, this was a huge episode. I actually looked up some stuff afterwards. They did an interview with Jonathan Nolan, and he said that, you know, yes, Insight is a quantum computer that is based off the original Westworld. And I'm not talking like the original Westworld in the show. I'm talking the original movie. You know, the idea of a quantum computer where humans build robots and then the robots build their own robots. And so they built Insight because
it's cool as hell.
They built Insight because they essentially wanted to build God. They wanted a computer, an entity. A lot of this is Serac talking to Insight. So he'll say, you know, he's talking to, you know, his friend. He'll say, you know, you need to know where you came from and why you're here. They wanted to make sense of the world. They wanted to predict the world. And Liam Dempsey's father was their first backer. And he bankrolled them. He thought that the program stuck because when they originally wrote it, they tested it by having it predict things that happened in the past, because it's hard to predict the future and then sit around and wait for it. You know, when you're doing tests, you have to sit there and wait for the results. So they fed it data and asked it to predict what's going to happen. And then they would see what actually happened in the real world. So the computer could be tested, you know, did it predict these things accurately? And they were like, yes, it's predicting accurately. And Dempsey's like, yeah, but that's the past. We don't need to know the past. We need to know the present. We need to know the future. So he was going to pull the plug until they actually showed him that it could work. And they showed him a predictive screen where they said, you know, these are 4 different outcomes for the market tomorrow. And one of these 4 will be the truth. It will absolutely end this way. And he's like, well, which one is it? And they're like, pick one. They'd actually not only been able to predict it, but they could actually influence it. So they, you know, he's wanted it to be up. So they fed money into the computer and told it to trade so that the market would be up. And it actually created the future. It created the market being up that much, turned 5 million into 100 million overnight. So the problem that arose, and right now I'm just doing Serac's backstory, because like I said, this is interspersed through the whole episode. The problem that arose was that, as he said, his brother was a brilliant man, but like most brilliant people, he was also very troubled. And his brother became erratic, chaotic. We find out that he started using the machine to try to predict the future, and he ran certain simulations to see how things would work. And Serac eventually tells Dempsey, he's like, yeah, one of the things that he was doing was he was trying to murder you. He wanted to kill you. And because he kept running different predictions on the future to see what would happen, and in every one of them, something went wrong. Dempsey's like, yeah, I've also looked at the future, and I've seen that you're not going to do anything to stop me, because in every one of these futures, you let me go. Serac's like, yeah, well, every one of them that my brother ran, as soon as word got out about what you've been doing and what this, what insight is, essentially, it caused humanity's downfall, like the extinction of the human race. Once this goes out, once people knew what was going on, it caused the extinction of the human race in everything that we've tested out. So Serac ends up killing Dempsey because he's essentially a loose end, and Serac wants to control insight himself. He thinks that he can still set the world right. He can still make a better future. He can still use the power of insight to give humanity hope. And Dempsey didn't agree with him, so he killed him. And he killed him in the most interesting way, by driving him out into the desert and showing him the wreck of a plane. And Dempsey's like, wait, that's my plane. And he's like, yeah, sorry, you didn't make it. And then he slams his head against it a couple of times and kills him. Leaves him out there with the wreckage of the plane. Because, again, he had predicted that this was going to happen. So while all that's intercutting in the story, we have Dolores and Caleb taking Liam Dempsey, the son. They've still got him captive, and, you know, Caleb's asking, he's like, why do we need him? We've already got all of his money. And Dolores is like, no, we need him for his access. You know, he's got access to a couple of things that we still need. So they take him captive. They're walking along, and he gets the drop on Caleb and doses him with that drug genre. Now, I had to look this up afterwards, because they did some amazing stuff with Caleb being on genre. Basically, the way that it's described is genre puts you through, as the guy there with the shirt that has his different emotions on it says, it's five drips in one, and they play out like movies. So basically, reality around you plays out like a movie. And so we see this almost immediately as Caleb, like, he starts having flashbacks of himself walking some guy somewhere, and as he shakes it off, the world goes black and white. They basically, okay, so Jonathan Nolan told The Insider that he based genre on Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, of all things, because it's the scene where Willy's talking about the piece of gum where you chew it and it's a full five-course meal in one piece of gum, and it sounds stupid, but that's essentially what this is. So the world goes black and white, and they actually got the composer to switch up the music to film noir. He said, give me something that's a love child of Out of the Past and Vertigo, which were a couple of thrillers from back in the 40s and 50s. So essentially, whenever it's not Caleb's point of view, the world looks normal. They're trying to escape in a cab, which cabs look really weird. Like, there's glass all around them, but they're bulletproof. And they're being chased by Serac's men. You know, Dolores basically says to Dempsey, he's after you. He knows that you're a liability, and he's going to kill you. So we're going to keep you alive. She hacks the car so that they can get away from these guys. And every time it switches back to, you know, what Caleb's thinking, it's not first person, but every time it's Caleb's point of view, it's all black and white, and it's that noir music. About halfway down the road, when the gunfighting starts happening, the genres switch up. And now everything is gritty and brighter. You've got Flight of the Valkyries playing. It was meant to be an homage to Apocalypse Now. So it's a war movie. You know, he's got his smart grenade launcher, trading bullets with the guys. They're still being chased down the street. Although I have to say, honestly, like, I understand it made sense because this is the future. Everything's more smart. The smart cars that are self-driving. It was one of the slowest car chases I've ever seen. Not as in like they were all going 20 miles an hour, but it was just, there was no high flying acrobatics. There was no, like, you know, Dolores is yelling at the car at one point. She's like, you know, accelerate. And they're like 90%. She's like faster, 95%, faster, 98%. And it's still just like me. I mean, I don't think any of the cars ever got up over like 45 miles an hour.
It wasn't what we're used to. Like in the movie Heat, where narrow streets, sharp corners. I get what you mean. It was a long car chase, but it wasn't high tension.
Exactly. Exactly. It was slower paced. Yeah. The roads were wide open. There weren't any other cars around to be rammed into. And then Dolores had set it up with her trusty motorcycle companion ahead of time so that they got to this one intersection. They, quote unquote, slammed on the brakes, got out and faced them down with their guns, but they never had to fire at that point because the motorcycle ran in front of them and crashed the truck. So they got to take care of the bad guys that way. And then the other truck comes up, they start exchanging gunfire, and then you see these figures appear from off screen and they're drawing their guns on Caleb and Dolores. They're walking up and then they turn and shoot the other guys. And it turns out that these are the two that Caleb has been running missions with. You know, the guy with the shirt and the woman there. And they're like, hey, you called for us? And she's got her little clicker thing there. And he's like, yeah, thanks. Okay, well, it's about time you started doing personals. So it was cool that we're getting back to that. You know, Caleb enlisted his video game buddies, if you will. And so then the genre switches again. And everything kind of gets like a little fuzzy haze over it. And it turns into a romance movie. We get the orchestra's version of the score from Love Story from 1970. And he gets all gooey-eyed over Dolores. And he's like, oh, it's never to the point of being like ridiculous. He's not like drooling on her and like trying to hump her or anything like that. It's just that the world looks and feels differently. So it looks like a romance movie and it feels like a romance movie to him. So now he's feeling like that. As they take Dempsey and, you know, move on to the next part of their escape plan. excuse me, sorry. I'm trying to think here. So the next part, because it kept jumping back and forth. They got away from those guys. Oh, that's right. They go down to the train. So they're going to get on a subway and they're going to take off. While they're down there on the subway train, Dolores is talking to, is it Nathan? Is that his name?
Yeah, I think so.
The Nathan copy that also is a Dolores, the security guard. And he stood up Bernard.
No, Martin.
Martin. Thank you. So
Tommy Flanagan's Martin character. Still has Martin. Bernard. Yeah.
So Martin still is Bernard and he's talking with Dolores and essentially he is there to hack into Insight. And while that's happening, the genre has switched again. We've now got the drama and we get the we get Iggy Pop's 1977 song Nightclubbing from Trainspotting. So now we've got the drama.
I want to jump in just real quick because I made a point to message you about this, but oh shit. Absolutely. Yeah. It happens after the fact. I apologize. I'm out of order. Keep going.
Okay. So Basically,
keep going.
He's looking around and he sees a guy that, you know, he's dressed in fatigues, but then he's not. And it's very much a head trip kind of thing. But he cuts a little promo in there talking about, you know, how they had rats in their barracks while they were overseas. And, you know, the rats were everywhere. So they had to set up this makeshift trap where they basically had a bucket with water in it and some bait above it. And the rats would climb up and they'd fall in and they'd drown. He said, you know, and it was painless. It was no problem unless you put too much water in the bucket. If you put too much water, then they thought that they had a chance of getting out. So they'd swim for hours and it was torturous to them and they'd die exhausted. And that's what you're doing to people. You know, you're giving them false hope. And Liam's like, no, my program actually gives people real hope. You know, my program is the entire world is built on hope. And he's like, no, this is just false hope, like what those rats had. You know, it's very dramatic. So Dolores gives the order to Martin and he unleashes on everybody in the subway car. They all get notifications on their phone and it gives them their inside information, their entire file, which you can see little bits on the screen. But essentially, this is everything from your credit score to what jobs you are suited for, to whether or not you are fit to be a parent or to be married. How you're going to die. One woman sees that, you know, in the next 12 years, she's going to have early onset Alzheimer's. One woman's there with her daughter. It says she's going to commit suicide. You see couples that start fighting because, you know, whatever they see on their phone tells them that the other person is going to cheat or what have you. It's kind of chaotic, but it's not madness yet. Is this where you wanted to jump in?
Sorry. No, it's very chaotic. No, my jump in comes a little bit later. It's after all this has been revealed, because it's not just on the subway. It's everybody around the world.
And that's what Dolores announces. You know, they go topside and they're walking down the street and you know, Liam basically says that. He's like, you know, you screwed over all those people in the subway. And she's like, no, not them. I unleashed it on everybody in the world. And he's like, what? This was kind of cool, too. It was an orchestral version of Space Oddity by David Bowie. You know, Ground Control to Major Tom. I recognized that one immediately. The rest of them I had to look up. Like, yeah, I know that
That's what I messaged you last night when I was watching it. It was just like, holy shit. Like, this version of Space Oddity is amazing.
Yes.
And powerful, especially the way they used it. That's why I wanted to mention. But keep going.
Yeah. So very good music, very powerful. And, you know, Caleb's looking around and he's like, what's this genre? Because he switched again. He's on the fifth one. And the guy in the shirt had told him, he's like, oh, just be careful of that last film, basically. And so Caleb asks him, he's like, what's this genre? And he goes, this is reality. And that's what it is. You know, and that's why they've got Space Oddity, because it's kind of like, you know, this is reality, but it's the fucked up kind of reality. It wasn't necessarily the final trip. I think he was just saying, you know, this is reality as in, like, you know, you're not on the drug right now. This is really happening. This is really the people who were fucking up, because we did get one final one after that. But people were going nuts. They were throwing rocks through windows, beating the shit out of each other. And Liam makes it a point to say, you know, look at this. They just got this information and they've already reverted back to their basic selves. And so the utopian society, as it were, is crumbling because everybody has seen, basically, the computer predicted all this stuff. You know, it tells them, this is when you're going to die. This is what you're suited for. This is, you know, you're a shitty person or you're awesome or whatever. And it's too much for them, so chaos is reigning. The last scene that we get with them, they're walking along a beach. They go under a boardwalk. This one is apparently this is the final drip, and this is the thriller / horror. And this time they use music from The Shining. And that was kind of cool as well. Basically, they take Liam under the board.
I got to chime in real quick.
Yeah.
When this scene comes up, A, the picture looks different. The wash they have on what the screen or what you're seeing looks different. And the music, I mean, it was awesome. Just plain really, awesome. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, it was absolutely awesome. And they basically, they take Liam under there and, you know, he starts fighting with Caleb and not fighting physically, but like, you know, he's telling them all, he's like, you know, you've ruined the world. This is blah, blah, blah. Everybody was supposed to have a place in it. He gets shot by the girl, like the woman there that Caleb's been working with. She shoots him and basically says, you know, I guess I did have a choice, you know, because the computer essentially was trying to prove to them that they didn't have a choice, that their destinies were all pre-written. This was, so a lot of this that was happening was kind of a mirror to what Dolores did in Westworld. You know, she woke up all the hosts and basically showed them that their lives were pre-programmed and that they didn't have a choice except for that they did, you know, that they were scripted, that they had programming that prevented them from doing anything other than what they were told to do. And she woke them up and they revolted. She's kind of doing the same thing with humanity in a way, except I don't think she wants them to be free. I think she wants them to destroy themselves so that her kind can take over.
Oh, I think so as well. Yeah.
So basically, Liam dies in Caleb's arms. Caleb's trying to, you know, close the wound on his chest. And he keeps telling Liam, you did this. You did this. And Liam's been having these weird flashbacks of himself and this other person leading a guy with a hood on his head in like an old abandoned warehouse type thing. And he looks up at Dolores and he's like, who does he think that I am? And we never get the answer to that because the rest of it is just the Ciroc story. And basically the Martin version of Dolores gets captured, sends Bernard and his bodyguard away, says, you know, you got to get out of here before Ciroc's men kill us all. Martin, quote unquote, Martin goes with Ciroc's people up to this penthouse and Ciroc's there. And he's like, look, you know, the break into our system came from this area. You're supposed to be one of my most loyal people. You know, what's going on? And Martin's like, well, let me look into it. And he, you know, does some little thing with his phone and sets off the bomb that he had planted there before and blows up the whole thing, except we see that Ciroc was just a hologram. You know, he was just dialing it in, essentially. And so now Ciroc is pissed. We get the last little bits of his story like I laid out before, and he actually has a conversation with Dolores. And it's very interesting, you know, whether they're doing this in cyberspace or what. But he basically has a conversation with Dolores and she tells him that she's going to free the world. And he doesn't like that.
No, he's not a fan.
So I probably missed some stuff in there.
But I think. No, I don't really think you did. But I guess the big thing for me was it makes me think, is there something more to Caleb? Like, is he an actual person? Is he, maybe he's got some is he an actual person? Maybe he's a machine. I don't know what it is, but there's something about Caleb that's off. And Caleb also knows there's something about Dolores that's off, because there was the moment where these two people came out of a car with guns and Caleb didn't realize kind of what was going on. And Dolores stepped in between and she got shot 3 times and she killed both of them. And he saw that she'd been shot, but wasn't bleeding and seemed to be fine. And she just zipped her coat up and they continued on walking.
Now, there was something very interesting about that, because I watched it twice and I'm pretty sure that when he looks down, he sees the bullet holes. It looks like the bullets went through her, like through her back, when he was standing right behind her. Because he looks down at her,
I saw the same thing, was wondering the same thing myself.
Yeah.
I saw that as well, and I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, I'm not sure what that means.
I do not either, but I guess we'll find out. Hopefully. But anyhow. No, I think you did a good job covering that, because it was a lot. It was a lot.
Yeah, it really was.
Let's see. That's all for shows, right?
Correct.
Did you watch any movies? You say you watched 3.
Well, I watched a couple of comedy specials, and I watched 2 movies.
What did you watch for comedy specials?
Chris D'Elia has a new one out called No Pain. That guy is hilarious. He's just an absolute riot. In fact, I watched his No Pain, and then I went back and found 2 others on Netflix that he had done and watched both of those. They hold up. He's a riot. I like him. He laughs at his own jokes, which reminded me of that guy that we watched recently, you know, the Hey Big Guy.
Yeah, the shirtless guy.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
And the other one that I watched was Taylor Tomlinson, Quarter Life Crisis. It was quite funny as well. She's good. And it was very interesting to hear her say that she's 25 years old and she doesn't drink and doesn't do drugs.
She's what's it called? Not drug free. It's something to do with X. I can't think of what it's called now.
Oh,
Straight Edge.
Oh, yeah.
That's what it is. Straight Edge. Yeah, Straight Edge, because you don't drink, you don't do drugs, you don't smoke. Yep, it's Straight Edge.
Yep.
You know, it's funny. I watched that one guy without his shirt on. I really don't watch comedians a whole lot. I used to watch them a lot more when I was younger. And sometimes I wonder, like, are there any good comedians today like we had? Because I guess the most recent modern comedians I've watched were Daniel Tosh, and he's very out there with his style of comedy. And who's the guy that we saw at the State Theater?
Aziz Ansari.
Aziz Ansari, yeah. Before he got all the trouble he got into and everything. And I just kind of wonder if there's any worth going to see. If we should be paying attention.
I would go see Chris D'Elia in a heartbeat. The guy who plays Meller is actually a comedian. Brian Callen. I would see him if he came somewhere. He used to be on Mad TV, so he's actually a very funny guy. Dude, the Chris D'Elia, the new one that I watched, No Pain, he does this whole bit for like 5 or 10 minutes about AirDrop, which I'm sure you know what that is. Basically, Apple has a thing built in where you don't have to have somebody's phone number. You could just AirDrop photos to them if they're on Bluetooth, you know, if their Bluetooth is active and you're in range of them. And he does this whole thing about it, and it was the funniest thing. I laughed so hard because he's talking about, like, he loves doing it on planes. He says, you know, like, I was getting on a plane the other day, and right before it, I Googled Asian family. He goes, and don't ask me why, I'm 39. I fucking Googled Asian family, and I got this picture, and then I got on the plane, and I was like, holy shit, there's like 20, 30 people that all have their AirDrop on. And he just AirDropped it, all of them. And then just sat there and watched them all just like look at their phones and then look around. Like, what the fuck is this? He said, I will take a picture of you. I will take a picture of you where you are sitting, and then I will move and AirDrop it to you. He goes, you want to see some confused fucking faces on people. They're looking around. They're like, where is he? Who is he?
That's awesome. Yeah. I'll probably check that one out.
You should check that one out. I think you'll like it. I'm sure you know him. He was Hendy on this season of You.
Oh, yeah, him. Henderson. Okay, yep.
Yeah.
God,
yeah.
He annoyed me on that show.
He's a fucking riot. So, yeah. Check that one out. I strongly recommend it.
I'd go see Meller if he did stand up.
Yep.
Just to go see Meller in person. Yep. You know, I went and saw... I saw Jay Leno years ago, like in 2008, I think it was, at Foxwoods with Jay. And he was still doing the Tonight Show then. It was a disappointment. His set was like 75 minutes, which is decent, but it was an hour. Jay Leno. It was an hour of like his Tonight Show, like when he'd come out and do his monologue and he'd do like all the news and current event type jokes. And it was just like, okay, this is getting old so fast. And then like the last 15 minutes was your traditional like stand-up comedian storytelling jokes. And that was excellent. But like the first hour was not, it was okay. But tickets were very expensive to see him too.
Yeah.
So anyhow, but I still think the best stand-up I've ever seen was Carlin, so.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Do you watch any movies?
I mean, I watch some movies that, like, I haven't seen in a long time, but they're nothing new. Like, the wife and I, we have this new tradition, if you will, like, kind of on the weekends now when we really don't have much to do around the house. I've done so much shit around the house, I don't have anything to do come weekends. Or in between going outside and playing basketball. So we just grab a movie off the shelf, a DVD, and throw it in. A couple weeks ago, it was The Wedding Singer. And then this past weekend, it was Elizabethtown, which I hadn't watched since 2013 when Kate first showed it to me. And I don't know if you've seen it or not. It's a Kirsten Dunst, Orlando Bloom movie. Takes place in Elizabethtown, Kentucky. It's a good movie. I really enjoyed it. The ending, not the ending. Okay, there's a montage at the ending that's decent, but there's this scene where this band named Ruckus is singing Freebird at this funeral memorial that is just absolutely friggin' hilarious that I love. So it's a fun watch. You'd enjoy it, John.
Nice. I've never seen it.
And then yeah. I watched. You've never seen it? Yeah, you would probably enjoy it. Then I watched a new movie on Netflix called Code 8. It's the Stephen Amell and Robbie Amell. I guess they did a Kickstarter for this movie. Takes place, I don't know if it's the future or in a current world where people have superpowers. And it's weird because it's not like flying or this or that. It's like, for instance, an electric is someone that can handle electricity without getting hurt, or maybe they can weld without using any welding material, just using their fingers. And electrics built the world we live in because people wanted to use them for their abilities to build really well and cheap labor and this and that. But now electrics are outlawed and you can't use your powers unless you have a permit. And if you get caught using your powers without a permit, you can be arrested or go to jail and this and that. And I don't want to give it away anything more than that, but I thought it was a decent movie. Did you watch it?
I did. I thought it was... Now that you say that it was Kickstarter, that makes a lot of sense. And they probably didn't have any flying people because the special effects would have been too expensive. It was decent. Yep. It was definitely nothing that I didn't give a hard sell to.
No, but I mean, it just came out Friday, so I like to give people an option to watch it before ruining it or giving it away.
Right.
I will say, I mean, I think it's worth a watch one time, basically. Yeah. It's weird seeing Stephen Amell not as Oliver Queen, but at the same time, basically like that he could have been playing Oliver Queen in this movie.
Yep, I agree completely. He basically was gruff and,
yeah,
and rude and bastard.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, he basically was like Oliver Queen season one in this movie. What was the other movie you watched?
This was kind of fun. Basically, I saw that this movie was on sale on Amazon Prime, and I had a $3 credit, so I got it for $7, but I bought Knives Out. And with my mom and sister, I basically was like, you know, let's sit down, let's have a nice little, you know, get together. And it was awesome. I will not go into detail about it. Everyone should see this. If you like a mystery movie, if you like suspenseful, I will tell you one really weird thing is that you are told what happens or what happened in like the first 10 or 15 minutes of the movie. And it really threw me off, but it's amazing that it's so well done. I laughed a lot. But like good humor, not like slapstick comedy humor. It was so well done. I really, really liked this movie, and it was a slow burn, and you got to check this out.
All right. I will. It's fine. It's been on Redbox for over a month now, but the problem is I don't want to go use Redbox. I'm not afraid I'm going to catch COVID on it, but I have to go into a store typically to use the Redbox, and I have to go back to the store the next day to return the Redbox. So I haven't Redboxed anything in so long, but that is definitely a movie I want to check out. So, hey, here's a funny thing I saw someone post on Twitter. Couldn't what?
I couldn't turn it down because, like I said, it was on sale for $10 to own it, not to rent it. And then it was, you know, I had a $3 credit from Take Your Time With My Stuff. So basically I got it for $7. Which, you know, if you're going to rent it for $2, right, then, you know, an extra $5.
Yeah, oh, no, absolutely. Especially if it's one you're going to want to watch repeatedly. Here's a fun thing I saw someone post on Twitter today. Someday the theaters will open again, but what was the last movie you saw in the theater? And so many people were so upset the last movie they saw was Frozen 2. the last movie I saw in the theater was in February. It was in February. It was 1917. What was the last one you saw in the theater?
Oh, man. Hold on. Let's see if I can look that up on my phone. There you go.
While you're looking that up.
Because I legitimately don't
remember. I had to look it up myself. I couldn't remember either.
Oh, I'm not disappointed. The last flick that I saw was The Invisible Man.
Oh, nice. I also saw that Cinemagic had posted on their Twitter, or specifically, I think it might have been the Sokka one or the Westbrook one. Maybe it was their Facebook, but basically said like, hey, so someday we're going to reopen, but we have a feeling that once we're able to open again, that the theaters, that the movie houses aren't going to be able to get us movies straight away. So what classic films would you like us to screen in the meantime once we can open again? I thought that was pretty clever.
That is. I like that.
So I just want to share something. And I shared it with you earlier, but I made myself a pretty awesome friggin' purchase on Mercari last week, and I got it in the mail today. I got a VCR a couple weeks back from my cousin because he had an extra one, and I got it all hooked up, and I only own a couple VHS tapes. Who? Johnny. Oh.
I was going to say, normally getting a VCR is not something you would really brag about.
Yeah. But I wanted one because I had some old wrestling tapes that I couldn't watch. And I just made mention that to him. And he's like, oh, I got a VCR you can have. And I was like, sweet. And then I bought Evil Dead on VHS because I'm an idiot. But anyways, so I decided, like, I'm not going to buy VHS tapes on the internet. This is going to be something fun I can do, like when I go out flea marketing or yard selling, you know, if I see one for real cheap, like 50 cents or something like that, or especially if it's a movie that hasn't been released on DVD ever. Anyway, it's just, I'm weird. What can I say? I'm regressing on my technology in some areas. However, there was one set of movies that I was talking to my buddy Brandon about, and I was like, you know what I'd really like to get is the original Star Wars trilogy before the Lucas edits. You know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
And they did because they have never released those on they've released them on VHS previously, but the only thing they've released on DVD are the ones with the new Lucas edits, you know, having Han shoot first, or the extra cantina scene, or the other, or changing fucking Vader's face to look like what's his name? Mannequin Hayden Skywalker. Christian. Hayden Christensen. You know what I mean? All that stuff. They've never released that on DVD. They've never released it on Blu-ray. They've never released them digitally. The only way you can get them is old VHS tapes or Laserdisc, because they did release them on Laserdisc in 93 the last time. So,
right.
And me wanting to take it a step further, a lot of the old Star Wars VHS tapes are in full screen because, you know, the 4x3, the old square, you know, TV set tubes that we had. However, in 1992, they released a really nice special letterbox collector's edition. And I liked when I was reading about it, the person wrote, remember those dorks at Blockbuster that kept telling you the letterbox is the better edition? Well, they were right. So the letterbox edition comes with like a collector's booklet. It's an abridged booklet, you know, that shows pictures from all three movies. It's got all three movies in widescreen letterbox format. It's got an additional fourth VHS tape that's a documentary about the making of the Star Wars trilogy. And typically it goes for anywhere from $50 to $100 on eBay when I've looked up sold. Like they're expensive. And it's like, well, it's definitely not something I plan on buying anytime soon. And then I looked at Mercari and someone was selling one for $28 with free shipping. And the pictures they put up there looked really good. And they said they were open to best offers. So I best offered her $23 and she accepted it. And I got it in the mail today. And I sent you pictures of it. Dude, this thing, someone took very good care of this the last 28 years. I would wager they opened it once, they watched the tapes once, and then it's been sitting on the shelf since then. Because these boxes look so nice. And what I think is great is I can't wait to watch these, but I'm waiting to watch them with my son. A New Hope doesn't say A New Hope on it. It just says Star Wars on the box. And then Return of the Jedi and Empire Strikes Back say Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi. It doesn't say Star Wars, Empire Strikes, you know what I mean? They haven't been retitled like they are currently. So, because my son Kanan the other day said, we should watch 4, 5, and 6 again because we haven't watched those in a long time. And I was just like, yeah, we can. We'll watch them on Disney Plus because we have them on Disney Plus, or we can watch them on the Blu-ray or the DVD because I now have, you know, I now have them on VHS as well, but it's the original theatrical version. So I'm actually pretty excited about it. Pretty geeked out about it.
That's all.
Yeah. And I sent you those pictures. I mean, didn't that look nice?
It did. Yeah. And it was very nostalgic looking at them as well, because, you know, it's all old school stuff.
Yeah. And fucking $23 for this thing shipped. It's just like, whew. I caught me a hell of a deal.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, that was an
amazing. Yeah, absolutely it was an amazing deal. News and trailers, what you got?
So trailers, I sent you most of these, but I'll go over them real quickly. Stargirl didn't do anything for me.
Nothing for me whatsoever.
We got a back-to-back. Peacock is getting ready to release, so they gave us a trailer for the Saved by the Bell reboot and the Punky Brewster reboot. Also, neither of them really did anything for me.
So the Punky Brewster reboot trailer, it's not really, well, I wouldn't call them a reboot. It's more of a sequel because it's not starting them over. It's continuing the story because Punky's now an adult and she has her own kids. That trailer was so brief, it did nothing for me whatsoever. Yeah, it didn't even, like, I don't know. It wasn't even nostalgic, to be honest, other than the point where she's like, oh, Mom, you have two different color shoes on. And she looks down and goes, still works. Yeah. And then the Saved by the Bell trailer featured mostly Slater, and we saw Jesse. And again, that trailer kind of looked more like a CW show, and it didn't do anything for me until the end, when Slater had the two kids in the office, the two boys, and they had clearly been fighting or food fighting. He's like, hey, me and my buddy, we used to fight over all the same girl all the time. Hey, it was your mom and dad. Yeah. Anyhow. And, but I just, you know what I did? I just found another girl to hook up with and it didn't matter anymore. Hey, that was your mom. So that was pretty funny.
Yeah. Those were some funny moments, but they just, neither show really like grabbed me and made me excited. Of course, no. I didn't like, I was a big Punky Brewster fan as a kid, but I didn't really get into Saved by the Bell that much.
See, I was a Punky fan, but I was way more into Saved by the Bell. So what else?
They're remaking Valley Girl for some strange reason. This was a cult hit, if you can even call it that, that starred Nicolas Cage, and it was supposed to be, you know, the girl from the Valley back in the 80s who fell for the bad boy from across the tracks, and they're remaking it. It looks fairly decent, and it's got the actress who played Tree in Happy Death Day and Happy Death Day to You. So, I don't know, I might check it out.
Yeah, it just seems like a really odd movie to remake, but whatever. It is what it is.
Yeah. And the last one was a Quibi show that I just thought it looked funny. It's called Dummy, and it stars Anna Kendrick as a girl who discovers that her boyfriend has a sex doll, and the sex doll talks to her.
Yeah, that seems weird, right?
It does. I'm still not sold on Quibi. That's actually one of my, I don't know. I'm not that sold on it. It doesn't strike me as anything that I'm going to go out and try to watch. Even when they switch over to TV stuff, I don't know if I'm going to care enough because they're all just short films, you know, short films, short shows.
Yep.
10 minutes. Yeah. As far as
excuse
news,
me, sorry.
Why? What's up?
No, I coughed and I apologize because I didn't mute
the
time.
Oh, okay.
On the news side, we lost two great entertainers in the same day. Howard Finkel, the Fink, passed away. He was only 69. I guess he'd been pretty sick the last couple of years, even wheelchair bound. So it's kind of sad, though. I mean, he was kind of the voice of my childhood when it comes to ring announcing for wrestling, because, you know, when someone won a title, when that title changed hands, what you wanted to hear the most was the Fink going, the winner of the contest, and World Wrestling Federation. You know,
wrestling for many years, but I remember him. That way.
He was always cool.
Yeah. And then Brian Dennehy passed away. He was 81. This was on April 16th, and you may know Brian Dennehy. Most recently, he played Dom on The Blacklist, but what I remember him the most from is Tommy Boy, First Blood, and the FX movies.
Yes, and just so you know, they did say that he is going to be appearing on, there is one more episode in the can of Blacklist where he will be appearing.
Oh, wow, yeah. I did see that there was a couple of movies that he had already filmed parts for that haven't come out yet. So,
yeah,
that's really all I have for news. Do you have any other news?
I do. The show that I really like, God Friended Me, got canceled. But the thing is, apparently they told the writers about this far enough in advance. They've known about it for a couple of months, so they've actually written the end of this season as a series finale, so that's kind of cool.
Were they able to film it?
Yes.
Okay, cool. That's cool. I like that. Yeah. Yep. I think it's good. Hey, we're gonna cancel you, finish the season, that way you can at least end the show, so that's good.
Yeah. AMC is going to be airing the first season of Creepshow starting on May 4th, so you know, it's on Shudder, but AMC is the parent company, and they're actually going to air the first season, so people can watch it on AMC as well.
That's cool.
J.J. Abrams is going to be making two new shows for HBO Max. One of them is based on The Shining, and it's called Overlook. And the other one, okay, which I'm super fucking stoked for, is called Justice League Dark.
Now, yes, that will be awesome. However, is that going to be animated or live action?
Live action. They have not said anything else about like casting or whatever. I'm really hoping that they tap Matt Ryan to stay on as Constantine. But who knows? Because it's going to be on HBO, so maybe they'll go with somebody else.
Here's my next thing, though. HBO Max is going to be its own streaming service. Are you going to switch over from getting HBO through your cable and going to HBO Max?
Quite possibly. Unless they can give me a better deal, because I've heard that some people who get it through cable will be able to get it, get HBO Max, either on discount or as part of the package. I don't know.
Because HBO Max is a very unimpressive, like, $18 a month.
Yeah, yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. So. Cool. All right.
LeVar Burt might be in season 2 of Picard. He's been talking about it on social media.
I know he asked Whoopi Goldberg to be in it.
Yep. So now it's looking like LeVar also. I put this in my news. It was weird. I got a notice this evening, right before we were recording, because I do a lot of digital movies through Vudu, and I know you have as well. And I got this notification that said, yes, "Hey, good news! Vudu is getting bought by Fandango. Don't worry, there's lots of good stuff coming. Your digital library is fine; it won't be going anywhere. Just keep an eye for future stuff that's coming, and we'll let you know more."
Interesting. You know, it's funny about that, because a lot of people have invested a lot of money in their digital libraries.
Yes.
You know,
it's always
like
a tough
some people call like you just. It's always a tough call for you.
Whether it's digital or physical, because they both got pluses and minuses. You know, physical, you're always going to have it. You know, there's no chance that the company that you own the digital copy through is going to go under and you're suddenly going to lose it. It's not dependent on the internet. So, you know, if the internet's out, then you can still watch your movies. But physical is also very susceptible to breaking, getting smudges, scratches. You know, it can be destroyed much more easily than a digital copy can.
Yeah, it can be. Yeah, I know. It's tough, because digital, if like, for instance, even with Vudu, you can like you can download the movies like on your tablet or whatever. If you have memory, you can download the movie. So if you take it with you and like your kids take it in a vehicle or something of that nature, they can just, as long as you fire it up on the tablet, they don't even need internet to watch it if they've downloaded the movies, you know. Or like you just said, physical media is susceptible to damage, whereas the digital, you know, digital in the cloud movies really aren't. I don't know. I always kind of worry about spending like too much money on a digital copy, because I guess it's my lack of faith in, like, for instance, like all these other digital streaming companies, like Movies Anywhere and whatnot like that, they've all gone out of business or gone to the wayside. And now even Vudu is being bought out by Fandango, like, you know, it just said. So, I mean, like, that could change, you know. If I lost all that digital media and I didn't have access to it anymore and I've spent a lot of money on it, it would really piss me off. And I realized that, you know, Ultraviolet also went to the wayside. And I realized that, like, you know, a lot of new movies and physical movies now come with a digital copy. And you have people like a guy we both know who will buy the Blu-ray digital combo, probably even with DVD, take the code out, punch the code into their Vudu, and then put the disc away in the closet and never even put the disc in the player ever. You know?
Right.
So, yep. I mean, anyways, I don't know. I've been regressing a little bit, I guess, like I said, buying VHS, the Star Wars trilogy on VHS and hooking up a VCR and everything to watch that old media. And Kate and I have actually been watching DVDs as of late. And like I said, with watching The X-Files, it's like, I actually might want to watch these DVDs that I've owned for, 20 years now instead of not using them. I mean, sincerely, like I have owned these 9 seasons of X-Files on DVD for 20 years because I think the last set came out in 2000. Well, the last show aired in 2001, and the DVD came out later that year. So, I mean, almost 20 years on all these sets. So it's like I might want to utilize them instead of just keep constantly carrying them from house to house the last few years when I was moving around. So, but I don't know. I get what you're saying. It's like the switch from DVD to Blu-ray or VHS to DVD or, you know, people that like still having a book physically in their hands as opposed to, you know, the Kindle, or physically wants to have a comic book in your hand as opposed to just buying all their comics digital.
Or in my case, where I play a lot of video games.
Video, exactly. Sometimes it's like, here's my deal. When it comes to video games, if it's cheaper to buy the game digitally, that's cool. But if you're going to spend $60 on it, wouldn't you want to have that physical backup in case something happens? So you can plug the disc in or plug the cartridge in and download it again.
See, there's a bit more to it there, too, because, A, usually the physical copies are actually cheaper than the digital copies, which is very bizarre. But the other thing with it is that, like, say I'm playing my Switch. You know, if I get bored of a game and I own a digital copy of a different game, I can just back out and launch that other game. Whereas with cartridges, you have to close the game, then you have to eject the cartridge, then you have to put the new cartridge in. And again, you've got the chance of damage or losing it. You know, those are little tiny cartridges for the Switch. Same thing with the PS4. You know, yes, I eject the disc and then do I put it back in its case or do I set it up on top of here and risk that it's going to fall over and get scratched? Whereas if I have a digital one, I could just immediately launch the new game.
Right. It's the ease and convenience of it all. I get it.
Yep.
I completely get it. But I know a lot of guys like that, like they read tons of comics and it's cheaper to buy a digital comic than it is to buy the physical comic. And their thing is they don't. I guess my thought is if I'm spending money on something, I want to have something to show for it. I don't want to pick up my tablet and go, oh, see my tablet right here? I got 10,000 comics on it, which is cool, but it's like, I don't know.
Well,
to them, it's more about reading the stories.
Just to counterpoint you'll spend sure. $10 to $13 to go to the movies. You don't get anything physical out of that.
I get the enjoyment of sitting in the theater, watching the movie on the big screen with surround sound and not being home and
yep.
So that's how I justify not being home or going to the drive-in. You know, you go to the drive-in and it costs $20 for the carload to get in and you get a double feature and, you know, you're sitting in your car listening to your car speakers, obviously. But again, it's the experience of it's the different experience of watching a movie in that manner.
Yep. So,
but then again, I don't buy movies like I used to. I mean, I really don't. I used to buy every wrestling DVD that came out, and now I rarely buy them. I used to buy tons of movies all the time, and now I very rarely buy them. I buy more older movies than newer movies because I want to watch the older movies, and I want to watch the newer ones.
Yeah, like
you find yourself in the same boat.
Yeah, I'll look at those sales that are like, you know, $5 for, you know, Tommy Boy. And I'm like, you know what? I'll buy a digital copy of Tommy Boy for $5 so that it's in my library and I can check it out whenever I want because I know that I like that movie. Whereas, you know, this Knives Out purchase was a rarity because I just don't buy new movies anymore.
Yeah, it's because I haven't seen it. It's unproven. You know, if I had seen it in the theaters, maybe my son, you know, he's younger. He's 14. So he's more on like we went to the movies and he saw Midway and he was like, I want Midway when it comes out. You know, I want to buy that movie. So with some of his birthday money, he gave it to me and I got him the Blu-ray DVD digital copy because I don't know. Like we have a Blu-ray player here, but I think at his mother's house, he has a DVD player in his room. And then with the digital copy, I put it on my Vudu and he has my Vudu, you know, and then. Same thing, you know, in 1917, when that came out, he wanted that the day it came out, except his mother hooked him up there. And because she's a genius, she bought him the She bought him the 4K Blu-ray digital version. So she spent the extra $10, you know, for a copy of a movie that she will never be able to watch, probably, because she still has the Blu-ray player from before we got divorced that I bought. Well, we bought together, whatever you want to call it. And Kanan doesn't have a Blu-ray player in his room at his mother's house. No one has a 4K player, you know, in either of our houses. So he's just like, whatever, here's the Vudu code, Dad. He's like, sent me a picture of it. So I put it on my Vudu and he was watching it digitally at his mother's house. So he's in that boat of, you know, he like what we used to be buying that new movie the second it came out, you know.
Right.
Like, are you buying all the Marvel movies still?
Nope. I haven't bought one in quite a while.
Yeah, so either have I. That's hilarious. I did buy Wonder Woman though when I bought that, but that was the Best Buy Black Friday, you know, $7 Blu-ray sale type of thing. Anyhow, that's it for me. Do you have anything new or anything else you want to add?
I have one last piece of news that I found particularly fun. I thought I'd share.
Okay, sorry.
That's the last one. So I'll actually read you this part of the article just so that you can get the full breadth of it. It says, just 3 months after Evil Dead star Bruce Campbell lobbied Kevin Smith for a role in the filmmaker's upcoming Mallrats sequel, Smith has confirmed that the character of Bruce Campbell, played by himself, will appear in the film, dispensing some advice and filling the role the story originally served by Stan Lee's extended cameo appearance in the 1995 original.
I can get behind that.
Bruce Campbell as Bruce Campbell.
I can get behind that.
Giving sage advice.
And ball rides. All right. I can get behind that 100%.
Yep.
Nice.
So,
well, I just wrote this two-part on my new blog I have. I haven't really publicized it to anybody else, but a few people know it. I wrote this two-part blog on the rise and fall of Kevin Smith, in my opinion. And it's drugs. That's what made me stop liking him as a creative person, as a writer and director and podcaster and everything is when is after he did Zack and Miri Make a Porno and met Seth Rogen and started smoking lots of pot.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I'll check out Mallrats too to see that scene with Bruce Campbell.
Damn straight.
As Bruce Campbell. Yeah. Was that final tidbit? I thought you said you had a couple.
That's it. That's all that I got left.
Oh. Cool. All right. Well, that's the show, I guess, then. I'm on Twitter. I'm Superstar ML.
I'm the Quantum Geek, G33K.
And that's it. Maybe someday we'll record together again in person. And we'll have a much better flow.